drinking alcohol that wants to get into.
Sorry about all that. Welcome everybody to the Communications Committee. Welcome Sally, Eleanor, Lisa, Ben. Good to see you all there. Apologies from Graham Bell. I will move that we receive that. Nobody's going to second. Oh, thanks, Dave. In favour, say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. No leave of absence. We're otherwise attending. Meet the agenda, as far as I know, is as it stands. Are there any conflicts of interest? There's nobody in the public forum. The minutes are on subsequent pages, several of them. Would somebody move the confirmation of those, please? Thanks, Councillor Hope. Second to Councillor Noon. Those in favour say aye.
Aye. Mm-hmm.
Against, carried. Thank you. Moving to our substantial report, the first one, the governance report, covers a wide range of items. I'm going to take them all as read, but please do note that for paragraph 8 there is an attachment to do with the minor adjustments to the corporate logo, and you'll have been able to see and probably squint at it to see what the minor adjustments were, but you'll have worked out that there's a different font. The Mountains to the Sea logo is still there, but has been sharpened to look better. And the really good thing about that is that we are probably the first corporate in New Zealand history which has managed a rebranding at absolutely no cost. Are there any other items on the first couple of pages of Sally's report that anybody wants to question? Yes, Councillor Lawton.
Thank you. This is maybe not a question for you guys, but I'm hoping you'll know. Paragraph 7, where it's talking about the burn, dry, breathe easy. So there's a round of letters that have gone out to properties who have been seen to maybe not be, well, not to not be compliant. Then what? So what's the next step once they've received the letters? Hopefully some of them will contact us. What if they don't?
I may, through the chair, I believe that that is part of a wider regulatory approach. So it was agreed at the start of the campaign that we'd begin with education, which we did do this year, targeting Arrowtown specifically. And then later in the season, the compliance team did send out letters to all letterboxes advising that they would be doing some monitoring, and that if they spotted any, wrongful burning, then they would be following that up. I believe that has been done with some properties with letters going out. In terms of the regulatory focus itself, I'd have to check with the regulatory team on that one, whether action is being taken or if it's more, at this stage, more around the education for people.
Okay. Oh, I'll bring it up again in the meeting tomorrow. Cool. Mm. Thank you. And paragraph 10, it's talking about the U3A. Is it the U3A? Yep. Mm-hmm. Again. And last time I asked if whether or not those series of presentations, which seem like there may be a bit of work to go into them, are going to be able to be shared more widely, perhaps go off on our website or some way of further sharing that information, which might be interesting to people.
Good question. My experience of U3A is once you get on that circuit, it's hard to get off. but Mrs. Gardner, you might like to comment on the experience to date and whether it's got a future.
Well, just to recap for those of you who may not remember, U3A approached us about doing a six-week series of two-hour slots talking about our business and what we do. The members of U3A pay to attend the series, so they've got skin in the game, so to speak. We've had three weeks' worth of the seminars so far. Myself and Nick did the first ones. We did water for the second one, and then Ben Mackey and Jean-Luc did hazards this week, and I understand they've gone really well, being very well received. There's no issue with putting that information on our website. None of it's secret. It's, you know, all of the information that we talk about willingly anyway. So we'd be more than happy to put those presentations up.
So it's a shame we'll miss the opportunity to have a recording of it, though, which is probably what more people are interested in listening to these days. It just was an opportunity to take a snapshot of all the work that ORC does in a short, succinct presentation that was fit for public consumption. So it would have been a good idea, I think, to have recorded it and to share it. And I had asked about it previously and when I saw this opportunity come up. So it's a shame that we missed it. Yep.
We're doing some we're doing an exec roadshow over the next week or so. With catchment groups, so it doesn't have the same information, but there's a potential there for us to perhaps think about making sure that, we might be able to record some of that session.
Okay, thank you. I've got a. Are we also asking questions about the upcoming communications section?
We will in a moment. Thank you.
Okay.
You'll come to that on page 12 very soon. I just wanted to take us back to paragraph 2, where reference is made to a corporate video to help the community understand what we do on a wider scale. I'm happy to say that video is, as of today, available, and Lisa will be showing it to us at the end of this committee meeting. Thank you very much, Lisa, for making it available to us today. That's really good. Now, just before I go to Councillor Lawton's questions about upcoming communications, is there anything else on paras 1 to 11? Brian, Councillor Scott.
Can you just talk me through the logo? What's so good about the proposed one as opposed to the current one? I actually thought the current one was sharper. If you used the word sharper. The colour here is actually duller and the words are bold.
I used the word sharper in reference to the logo, not so much the print. The print is bolder, as I said, a bolder font. The logo itself, the mountains to the sea symbol, has had the rounded corners sharpened, hence my use of the word sharper. I think the score is Michael 1, Brian 0. Council Laws. Item 9, go for it.
4.4, communication on rabbits and wallabies.
Yes.
I must admit to a personal prejudice which has been prevalent in much of my life to do with public education campaigns. I was introduced to it at Parliament when they ran a campaign to stop young Maori women from smoking, did a survey afterwards and found after their $9 million campaign, 2% more young women were smoking than before the campaign. Now, this is what I have my problems with, so therefore, ever since then, I've seen those public education campaigns fail miserably, particularly in the public health sector, but usually everywhere else. I'm a bit worried about these ones too. My concern is, and I'll raise it with you now, listen, you don't need to do anything about it this time, but next time, how do you gauge the effectiveness of any public education campaign that you run? Can I ask that question? So if you're doing something, for example, on rabbits, guess what? You're responsible for rabbits. What's the effectiveness of that campaign? Do you have more of it? Do you have measurement standards that you have? Do you measure it by people ring up and say, oh, my God, I'm suddenly responsible for rabbits and they're running down my main street as they are in my main street? What happens?
I'm happy to take that. Evaluation hasn't been an area that we've been very strong in to date, and it's something that we're looking at presently.
Okay. Before you run your next public education campaign, can you get that sorted, please? Because you're just wasting money. And I know you're wasting money with the rabbit one. Because I know the reaction from my neck of the woods to that campaign. I just wanted to raise with you, Michael, I think before we run any more public education, we better have the evaluative
I'm completely on your side. I agree with you entirely. And in the old Ministry of Education days, exactly what we did do. Yeah. You sorted out your assessment before you began it. Councillor Kempton.
just very briefly, I'm going back to number 10. Now, I was involved in bringing U3A to council. I've done it three times, twice under previous management regimes and one under this one. I got two why would we's. This time I got why wouldn't we?
Yeah.
And I just want to tell you this organisation's changed a bit.
Thanks, Councillor Campbell. And for the better. Anything else on paragraphs 1 to 11? All right. Upcoming communications. Councillor Lawton, your cue.
Thank you. Just checking, again, it's a process question regarding regulation. Well, I guess it's actually technical, around the consistency of working together with Southland and water quality and where can I swim. The communication last swimming season was challenging about when the signs go up and when we put that information out online and all the rest of it. And then our follow-up in terms of keeping the community informed about what's actually happening in those swimming spots. So particularly Lake Hayes, for example, there was real concern about where the E. coli was coming from and no one was really communicating with them, definitely the broader community. I'm hoping that we've got that process sorted about exactly what that process is for who's communicating what and when for those swimming area closures, as well as the follow-up of what's going to happen and whether or not we're going to test for where the E. coli is coming from. And then are we sharing that process with Southland in terms of, you know, the communications part? Because alignment would be really helpful if we've got similar strategies.
I can answer that one through the chair. There is an interagency group between Otago and Southland, so that is the TAs, the regional councils, Public Health South, basically anyone who is involved in this. And we met at the end of the last summer season and held a workshop, and it was like ranging from science to monitoring to comms, like the whole shebang, basically, and went away with kind of, I guess, groups with things to action. We met again 2 weeks ago, and the outcome of that is that absolutely we will have alignment of the, I guess, the look of the signs between Otago and Southland. The premise is to point people in the direction of Lawa because that is where the most up-to-date swimming information is. But we're also looking at cost permitting, having permanent signage at all of those sites so that people can get a little bit of information around, you know, you're at Lake Hayes, this pretty lake, it can have some issues for these reasons. For the most up-to-date swimming information, go to Lawa. But also to have some more generic health messaging, such as we recommend you don't swim 48 hours after heavy rainfall, and if the water, or if you can't see your toes when you're standing mid-calf, again, we recommend that you don't swim. Apparently that's a public health message. So we're looking at developing signage templates at the moment that will get sign-off between the two, Environment Southland and ORC, right. And then we can start rolling it out.
Oh, and just on the point around whether or not we're testing... doing the, what's it called, testing the E. coli for its
source
tracking, thank you, yes. I know that's a technical question, but it's one of those ones that we get asked all the time, particularly from certain swimming areas around the Queenstown Lakes. They want to know right away what kind of E. coli it is, and obviously it takes time, but is there consistency across the region that we're going to do this coming summer, or is that another question I should ask Gavin?
It's probably more of a science question.
Cool. Okay.
Yes.
I can help.
Yep, that would be great.
So as I understand it, we routinely do source track, but the issue with source tracking is that it's not instantaneous. So basically we have to send the samples away to ESAR, and they do it for us, and there is a time delay, often of 2 weeks, as I understand it. So often the event has passed before we're able to tell people what caused it. It's just the nature of the work that gets done and where we are in the queue once we send the samples up. We have, I know that the science team has been proactive in working with ESR to see if we can make sure that we get some priority. But of course we're not the only ones who are looking to do source tracking. So that's some of the issue.
And that I think the community will just have to accept that. But having the ongoing conversation of the follow-up afterwards, which we will get asked about, so I'm trying to front-foot this, is that, look, we've gone away, we're going to source track, and we're going to be able to tell you if it's a human, which is what people were always concerned about, is that, because if it is, then we want to know where and why and how and all the rest of it. So it would be... good to have consistency and know where we do or don't do it.
And the good thing is, primarily when we've had those events, it hasn't been human. It's been birds.
Too many ducks. Cool. Thank you.
Good question. Thanks, Lisa, for that very comprehensive answer you gave, Councillor Lawton. And thanks, Sarah, too. Anything else on those bullet points under number 12? Councillor Neal.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the second last one, where we're launching an all-bus driver of the month. And I applaud that. But I think we would be better channeling our energies into ensuring that our operators pay our bus drivers at least a living minimum wage. And I think that would do a whole lot more to getting great customer service.
I happen to agree with you.
Is that part of our contractual
procurement? No, it's not. We've been hands off entirely. That's the operator's business, what they pay their drivers.
We can put that through our procurement strategy.
Can I help?
Please do, okay. If you contradict me, I'm very, very happy.
Okay. So, as you'll be aware, DCC has recently become an accredited living wage operator. Yep. What that means is they not only pay their staff a living wage, but they have nominated some of their key contractors and have an undertaking that they will try and ensure that those contractors are also paying a living wage. And you will have seen that recently I said we pay all our staff a living wage. We haven't traversed accreditation. The key reason is quite simply we haven't looked at it and we don't know what the cost implication would be, because you can imagine that those costs would be passed on and through our bus contract. So that's something that we'd need to look at and plan for, and that's really the only reason why we haven't made any further commitment. It's quite simply because we haven't done the work to understand the implication.
Yep. And have you got future plans for that accreditation movement?
Well, I certainly think we should be moving towards it.
Yes.
It's not that I don't think that. In terms of how we prioritise that, we just need to understand more fully the obligations and how we'd need to go about it.
Yep. I'd imagine that bus passengers would be very happy to pay a few more cents to ensure drivers got a living wage. But that's just my view. Thanks, Councillor Neal. Councillor Lord?
And I brought this up 2 years ago when we were reviewing our procurement document, and that's where this would sit, was to ensure that any new contracts that we go into, that there are standards. And even though, you know, that would be a key criteria that we would choose our service provider on, rather than only having it weighted on the contractual financial implications, you ensure that it's got that living wage aspect in it, as well as environmental footprints and all the rest of it.
Yep. Anything else under those bullet points in number 12? Good discussion so far. Thank you. Over the page, the Eco Fund, you'll have noticed that attached are seven reports from successful Eco Fund applicants. I hope you've had the chance to have a look through those. Some of them were a bit skinny, others were quite detailed. I'd be happy to receive any comments about those, especially comments that might lead to better processes for Eco Fund selection. Councillor Scott.
I think we're slowly getting there on this Eco Fund. It's in my view, its potential is immense. What I would have thought I would have received, what I would encourage in the future, is some type of staff template report on each one of these reports. So, yes, I have read them all, and as you said, some of them are skinny and some of them aren't.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there looking, well, you know, have they really fulfilled the agreed intent? And so I would have thought the staff would have just put, you know, here are the five key attributes, and yes, they have, or with a couple of comments, but it's okay, or we've gone back to them and they've given us further information. But it's important that we really get on top of this and it's tight? Because in the future, I'd like to see this eco fund, the numbers, the dollars increasing, the scope increasing. And so in some ways, I see this as a trial.
Yep.
So I would expect to have some type of staff audit and comment and a general recommendation that everything is in order, Mr.
Yeah.
Chair.
Yep. I think that's fair enough. You could pass that back to Shade, maybe, Lisa, here, and see whether she... I know she's got a big enough workload as it is, but...
we've got to get them right.
That would be good, yeah. I must admit, I had a wee bit of concern about the Upper Clutha Water Trust report because basically all they said was we've contracted Landpro and they're doing everything. But I had an extensive series of emails with Lisa about that and I finished up being satisfied that, in fact, that particular applicant, the Upper Clutha Water Trust, has a vast number of volunteers doing all manner of good stuff, and that's where they were putting the Eco Fund money into.
And their staff could have said that.
Yeah, exactly. It should have been, I think, put into context.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would have been helpful. Would have saved me annoying Lisa with dumb questions. But anyway, all right. Anything else about any of those seven? Yeah, Councillor Lawton.
I'd really like to second the comments made, Brian. That was exactly the point of there's nothing to measure it against. And if we want to show the value back to the community, we need to not... I think the stories are really valuable, but it's also... There's got to be the, you know, quantitative analysis as well. And in particular, you know, I hear from Upper Clutha Water Group, and then there's the... water quality testing kit from Craig Simpson, and I know that he's part of a catchment group and there's a whole range of it, but again, you wouldn't know from reading this. So a template would be really valuable, and I don't think it needs to be complicated. It could be as easy as taking this information and just assessing it against the criteria. Have they done what they said they're going to do? Spent the money in a good process and, yeah.
Exactly. That's
thank
right.
you.
Yep. That's all good Thanks. Stuff. And virus, oh, sorry,
just
Sally.
Just a little comment on that. Totally hear what you're saying. And I know that behind the scenes there are checks and balances done through the receiving of those reports and measuring or looking at them against the original applications. However, I think it's a great idea that we bring you into the loop and round that out in a more professional
way. Yeah.
Thanks for the feedback.
And I must say, Mr. Chair, this, you know, because we've struggled with this over the years, our governance works with staff and comes up with something constructive when we're interacting with the community.
Yeah.
And I just say, generally, you know, well done.
Yeah.
Let's really build on this as a process, staff, governance, community.
Good on you. I'm going to vote for you. Councillor Robertson,
there's a conflict.
Just thinking further on that and the type of analysis that would be useful, rather than just an audit of did we tick the boxes of what they said they were going to do, is what value are we getting from this?
Yeah,
it's almost
outcome.
Like the annual reporting type framework, a magazine annually that, or however often, biannually, that analyses what value we're getting from this fund. Treat it like a trust would.
Yep.
You put out a brochure annual review each year that portrays the value.
And I think I'd push that idea a bit further, Councillor Robertson, to build it into a regular biodiversity reporting, because I'm sure the Eco Fund's going to become an integral part of the implementation of that strategy.
Indicators of success.
Exactly. Against our strategic goals in biodiversity. Recognising the Eco Fund does more things than just biodiversity, but predominantly that's what it does do. Councillor Hope.
Thank you, through the Chair. With that last one being the audio, we had talked about putting that on our website. Did we think any more about that, or were we able to...
Podcast?
Yes, the podcast. Yes, from the university, what they were doing to show people the type of, successful applicant comes through on the Eco Fund and what others can do, just to give them ideas. Do we look at any more at that? Is that possible?
I don't remember that discussion, but it is a hell of a good idea.
I think it was your idea, actually.
Well, okay. Well, that was a superb idea.
Yeah. Vote for you then.
That was Dr. Concannon, wasn't it? I'm sure she wouldn't mind having it up on the website.
I just think it would be a really good thing to showcase how the different funding can be used. There's some great stuff out there. Dr. Penny Webster came to me afterwards when we had the penguins and said, look, we actually need someone to do a research on the coastline because we've never had it. Fauna, flora, predator, prey, food, that sort of thing. And imagine what you could do if we could then get audio to show somebody actually what they've found and quantify it. I just think we've got a chance there that we're kind of missing.
Thanks, Councillor Hope. Anything else on that? Enviro schools, any comments or questions there? Councillor Lawton.
Thanks. Just a bit of a report back, actually. So I went along to the Enviro schools Hui in Queenstown yesterday and talked to the kids about carbon footprinting, which was very fun. And there were about 60 of them from the schools across the Central Otago, Queenstown area. And it was a really amazing group. And what was highlighted over and over again was the value of having Robin there as a coordinator to bring all of those different schools together, and the opportunities that having the Enviro Schools people on the ground connecting those schools back into the community, that the value that both the schools and the community are getting out of it, and it's absolutely phenomenal. It isn't actually just the value that it gives to the kids, but the the teachers are learning more about how to integrate that work into mainstream curriculum, and the community's really benefiting from it too because it gets them a chance to tie into the school. The example that Western School in Waitaki gives for that first line on the report is a really good one. It's showing that actually the best way to teach these issues around environmental awareness is by integrating it into your core subjects. So how do you use the subject of environmental sustainability in math as a core subject? So it's how to, make those calculations. And that's what you're talking about with environmental education. It's not about doing something totally different. So to do that, the teachers need to be upskilled, and Enviro Schools and the coordination that Robin Zink and the coordinators on the ground provide is invaluable. And everyone at the event yesterday was talking about it. So thank you for inviting all the councillors along, I'm sure we would all learn something by going along because the kids are really onto it, which was great. I reminded them to talk to their parents about who to vote for and the role that government plays in all of this, and they were very keen to go away and do that, so that's good.
Well, good.
Oh, well, Gary Kelleher's daughter was there. yep. So, a few people.
Oh, good on you for going, Councillor Lawton. Sounds great. Yeah, Councillor Hope.
Just through to say, I think Robin Zink really does have some great energy. I think she really was made for that role. And I think, too, we were lucky enough, Councillor Brown and myself, and who was it in Oamaru for long-term plan? Remember they came from, and they were really, had just got into Borough Schools, hadn't they? And they were really passionate, and there was lots happening.
Been big progress in Oamaru since.
We kept pushing for that years ago when I first came, that there was nothing in Oamaru, and all of a sudden it's just taken off. So I think, please, through you and through her, please say she's doing a very good job. It's nice to hear that, Councillor Lawton, that you are soon be impressed.
Thank you, Councillor Hope. Is there any other feedback on that section of the report or on the paper generally? If there's not, I'll move that the report be received. Is there a seconder? Councillor Woodhead. I'll put the motion. Those in favour say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Thank you. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Oh, by golly, I almost forgot about the star term.
Part two.
There. Sorry, it was a last minute thing. Lisa, your video. Oh, it's coming up. Great. Should we do?
We can do.
No.
means thing.
Are you fine for me just to go ahead?
I'm sorry, I misintroduced you.
That's okay.
Ben, go for it. And then we'll have the video after that.
Okay. All right, kia ora koutou. The purpose of the presentation today is just to take you all through the work that's been going on with our customer experience strategy. I know that there's a number of councillors that are fairly interested in how we've been going in this space and the work that's been undertaken. So, yeah, for the presentation today, I'll just take you through that work that's been done and outline some of the service enhancement initiatives that will be prioritised based on those recommendations. It's really exciting to be here to talk to you about these exciting opportunities. We've got a really great team of customer service professionals, and I'm particularly proud to lead that team who give it their all and go above and beyond every day. So why did we embark on creating a customer service strategy? With an organisational commitment to customer service excellence, the strategy provides us with a platform to launch some great initiatives to ensure that customer excellence is well and truly alive with every interaction at ORC. This strategy commits us to continual improvement organisation-wide. It's clear that our current systems, procedures and technology do not always align with ratepayer expectations on how they want to interact with ORC. And let's be clear, customers benchmark their expectations for customer service on the level of service that they receive from their bank, their mobile or internet provider. So customer expectations are high. This is the first time that this level of deep scrutiny has been applied to our customer service function, a function that is absolutely vital if this organisation is to be perceived as professional and credible within the community. I believe customer service is a key area where one by one, with each interaction, we can build reputation. So in 2018, the comms and stakeholder engagement strategy provided the kickstart on our path towards customer service excellence. It states we'll treat our customers with respect by knowing them, valuing them, giving them what they want, and if we can't, telling them why. We've had a customer service function for a long time, but not a great deal of strategic thought has gone into how we want our customers to experience our services. So this statement underpins that refocused commitment. And here's another quote from me. Great service is the ultimate form of community engagement. And having been involved in comms as well, I genuinely believe that. Customers typically contact us because something has gone wrong or they have to do business with us. There's no choice about it. So the starting point is often adversarial. So the best practice for us is to make that customer service efficient, seamless and simple. In my experience, council seem to place a great deal of emphasis on comms and marketing, which is fine, but at the same time, if we neglect to prioritise customer service excellence, that effort and that comms and engagement space can be quickly undercut. So, yeah, by building reputation through exceptional service, we can create great advocates for ORC in our community. So this is the customer service strategy, which was delivered in July this year. We engaged with Pivot Point to provide an end-to-end overview of our customer service delivery function, and this is what they set out to do for us. So define high-level customer service objectives, outline how ORC wants its customers to experience its services, identify the top issues that are currently experienced by customers, provide some options that may be leveraged to make improvements, and outline some quick wins. So what the actual work looked like, there was quite a bit of research and analysis that went on, and there was a number of workshops that staff from our rates, public transport, comms, and customer experience teams were involved in. This involved some SWOT analysis, so identifying the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities and threats, and also doing some customer journey mapping, which is somewhat detailed in the image projected there. So customer journey mapping is a really important piece of the work. So if people aren't aware of that, an example of what we did was to take a typical customer inquiry. It might be requesting to request a penalty waiver on their rates. and mapping that process out step by step. So every single step of the process that the customer has to take, each of the touch points that they have with our staff, each of the key systems that are used behind the scenes. And it's just a really great process to outline where the gaps are for us and, you know, find where those opportunities are so that we can make that experience a bit more efficient and seamless for our customers. All this quantitative data was validated through observing customer interactions, and the team also mined the wealth of knowledge and anecdotal information that exists in the customer experience team. So that was done by taking customer feedback and looking at customer email trails. This was all backed up through one-on-one interviews with our customers and asking them about their experiences. So the key findings, there might not be a great deal of surprise with that one in the top left. So not all customers have a clear understanding of who ORC is and what it is responsible for. So that's a bit of confusion between ORCs and TAs. So there's definitely perhaps an education piece we could do around that. A lack of internal service level agreement and external customer experience positioning statement. So there's no formal agreement in place for our customer experience team at the moment around what we are to deliver to the rest of the organisation. So things like resolution times and response rates, we need to do a bit of work there to own that level of accountability internally and externally. In addition, we don't have like a clear positioning statement where we go to the customer and say, this is what you can expect when you engage with us, and these are the terms for how we want to engage with you as well. So it's a bit of a two-way street there. Online self-service options, so limited opportunities for people to manage their own information and facilitate transactions and track progress online. So we need to just identify where those opportunities are for increased online digital services. And we also need to do a bit around continuous business improvement, where we regularly capture those customer insights around email and phone calls. We can have those regular catch-ups and just look at what information we can be promoting online, what stuff we can look to automate. And then there's a range of systems used by our CSRs which create bottlenecks and extend inquiry handle time. So I'll talk to that in a little bit more detail soon. So these are the strategy recommendations, and I've themed them here into key kind of themes, if you will. So developing customer service standards and protocols, improving systems and tools, and improving accessibility and customer focus across the organisation. So customer service standards and protocols. So it's really important that these are endorsed at an exec level. So we need to go away and look at developing some customer experience protocols and service standards that align with our values and pillars. It could be statements like every interaction counts, or customer service is everybody's business, which are action statements that can underpin our service standards across the organisation. And then also create a channel strategy so we can influence how we want our customers to contact us to ensure fast and efficient service. A commitment statement, which I just sort of mentioned before, what we offer our customers and what we expect in return. And then develop a formal complaints process, so a system and process to capture and track complaints for response. We need to be treating our complaints like gold because they provide an essential resource for how we might improve. Likewise, through that same system, we can capture compliments or simply customer feedback, which can then be themed up and inform future decision making. For systems and tools, we have a current phone system and email system project ahead of us. That is a main priority right now. Our current phone system is pretty old, so we need to bring that up to current standards. So with a new system, we'll provide for greater customer visibility through creating customer profiles and tracking the history of past customer interactions, filtering in customer phone calls, emails, web chat and social media through that one system as well. And we can offer prioritisation based on the type of inquiry and service channel. So phone might be prioritised over email, or we can prioritise particular requests based on that staff training or level of experience. We're looking into establishing a customer service knowledge base, so that's to improve the consistency of service. That would look like one portal of information for all customer service processes, timeframes for action, and who our escalation points are. Currently, our frontline team lacks that kind of centralised portal. And finally, a customer relationship management system, which would then create one overarching view of the customer. So a scenario might be that a customer calls up. We could provide them with the information around how much they might owe on rates, but you know, while we've got them on the phone, we might be able to see that they also have a consent lodged with us, so we might be able to give them some information on when they can expect that to be completed by. So it's just finding ways through a CRM system that we can add value to those interactions. And again, it just shows that we know our customers and can provide a bit more value. We could log service requests through that system, allocates the staff member for action and follow-up, and track those inquiries for response. And it will also enable us to close the loop to make sure that we're going to do what we say that we're going to do what we say we're going to do and close those loops off, which again builds trust. So to embark on a CRM would be a significant process, a project, and would have touch points across the whole organisation. Accessibility, so looking at tech solutions to provide accessibility while also providing a baseline level of customer service across all channels. This will require an assessment on how we want to do business. So it's about having a clearly defined approach about where we provide face-to-face services around the region. Face-to-face is a high cost to serve channel, and we serve a vast region. So it might be about offering a number of face-to-face sites, which are backed up and strengthened by great online tools, which provide a seamless user experience. Another option might be to partner more closely with our TAs for opportunities for shared services in that face-to-face space. We have a 24-hour pollution hotline. We could tag on other services to that 24-hour hotline, where you could talk to an ORC representative at any time. That would indicate, while we can't be everywhere at once in terms of face-to-face, we have an incredibly accessible phone system and online tools. So what this might look like for the future state of our customer service rep workforce, if we're really nailing customer service, we're reducing the need for our customers to contact us, which may sound counterintuitive, but if we place all the information online and automate those transactional inquiries, we're enabling our customer support reps to do what they do best, which is solving those more complex issues, which in return makes for a more engaged team. And then we can run those, or direct those run-of-the-mill inquiries through low-cost-to-serve channels like our website or automated web chat. So what does it look like for the state, future state of our customer service reps? So it'll be more minimal transactional inquiries handled by staff, but by utilising the specialist skills of our CSRs, they can resolve those more complex inquiries, and support our customers using those online self-service and automated services. Our customer service staff might also have more financial delegation to waive things like rates, penalties within set criteria, which can make for a quick, easy and seamless first point of contact resolution for our ratepayers, and is something that many councils currently do. Something great that we're currently doing when customers contact us is that they talk to a customer service rep straight away, in most cases within 10 seconds. We consistently get great feedback that people are impressed by talking to an actual human within a really short time frame, so we need to look at those things that we're doing well and keep doing those things well. Just throwing up a couple of little icons here which are around, I guess, the future of the customer service space, which is around automation. So I've got this sort of down the bottom right some avatars, which are kind of a where the whole customer service space is going at the moment. It might be a bit spacey for a council, but what you're finding is there's a number of high-tech companies or maybe a luxury car company that might be using these AI avatars, which you essentially have a video call with these avatars, and they engage with you on that basis and can pick up on your emotions and things. So what you'll find at the moment is that's kind of a premium service. Mm. What we will find down the track is that automation kind of becomes like a baseline, and then the premium service sort of becomes talking to an actual human being. So for my second last slide, I just thought I'd share our ORC values, which if you combine them all together, very much align with customer service excellence. It's about providing the community with that sense that every interaction counts, and that ORC is a professional, incredible organisation to do business with. Creativity and innovation is going to be vital in this space too, with continuing advancements in technology and how customers access information. What is deemed acceptable today will be deemed as completely unacceptable in a couple of years' time, so it's really vital that we keep on evolving our customer experience offering. So what are the next steps? We're going to create an implementation plan that prioritises some of the initiatives that I've mentioned today. Improve accessibility of information and services online. Develop customer service protocols and standards. Improve customer service systems and tools. And empower our frontline staff to offer better outcomes and more first point of contact resolution. So that's it in terms of my presentation today. Thanks very much.
And before I go to questions, please accept my apology. You and I discussed that presentation on Stafford Street last Tuesday, and I completely forgot about it.
No problem at all.
But it was worth waiting for. Thank you for being so thorough and painstaking with that. Councillor Lawton.
Thanks, Ben. That was really great and awesome to see this particular issue being really picked up and focused on. You made really good points about how it is the front face of our organisation. A couple of extra questions and just things that whether you've thought about. A really important issue that keeps coming up around the likes of the pollution hotline and that kind of thing is anonymity and people's fear of being found out, that they're the ones to have gone and dobbed in their neighbour. So just thinking about that in terms of how that the strategy looks in terms of how that's dealt with and being able to really assure people who phone up and want that anonymity that you can retain that. I was interested in terms of your asking customers whether was there any difference in feedback from different parts of the region? So were different parts of the region feeling that they weren't as well, were feeling left out of an ORC service, and whether or not there's anything that could be done to, I guess, help those particular areas in the region?
I have to go and check, get some more information on the individual interviews that were conducted. Off the top of my head, I know there was some feedback through one person that was interviewed that they were happy to have a customer service presence in Queenstown, so that was positive to hear. On the kind of flip side of that, we're not getting a huge amount of volume in terms of customer service interactions through that Queenstown site, but I can definitely go away and get you some more information on some of those individualised interview responses if you like.
Yeah, I just think that would be, I think it would be important and interesting. It's something that we've been talking a lot about over the last 2.5 years in particular. I think too in terms of future planning around basing of staff and that sort of thing, that kind of information would actually feed in really well to that. So, and just finally, there was a,
I was wondering whether or not what you've been looking at includes communication with directly with staff from the community. So whether those, you know, communities coming straight to our community's customer service people, or whether or not that those emails or phone calls are actually going into straight to staff, and whether or not those that interaction's being logged. Because what I was involved in with Queensland Lakes District Council was anything that came in from any person in the community to any staff member was logged in a system so that, there was an action put against it. Because I do know that there's emails from the community that come into staff and I get complaints that they haven't been replied to. If they were logged in a central system, even if it wasn't that staff member that got back to them, they were checked and you could see that, you know, it's been 3 weeks since this person's had a response. And whether or not there was potential for that kind of system to be in place here at IRC.
Yeah, for sure. I think definitely something we're working on, and I think a system like a CRM or even a request for service logging exactly. system will definitely resolve those issues. In the interim, I think we're going to get some really good benefit out of our email and phone system that we're going to get upgraded, which will provide a bit more visibility and tracking. There is some work that we can do also around just looking at our website and ensuring that there's not, you know, just decreasing the level of promoted contact points that are on there, or just taking, you know, just taking down those little contact points so that we're ensuring that inquiries are tracked through a web form, and then that way it's sort of a little bit more centralised, and we can ensure that we've got more visibility as an organisation around that.
Unfortunately, I think the community's already on to the fact that if you take your first name, put a full stop, and then put your last name, that you get the person in the organisation you actually want to talk to. So we'll probably see a continuation of that, but if we can track them, I think, you know, yeah, it would be really helpful.
Yeah.
You're right. Council Lord.
In addition to that, I think one of the things Ben talked about was having some protocols and having some internal protocols. So we're not there yet, but my hope would be that, you know, if people were receiving emails within, you know, the first day of receiving that email, at the very least they're sending a holding email where they go back, acknowledge the fact they've got the email, say I'll be back to you in a couple of weeks, whatever the case may be, so that people don't feel like things have just fallen into the ether. Yeah, so there's definitely some very basic steps we can take.
Please. Yep.
Councillor Scott.
Yeah, earlier today we talked about a communications plan, I think, in relation to rabbits, and we didn't actually have an evaluation tool. And now I'm sitting here listening to all this, and what I hear is the best endeavours. And what I need to really convince myself is some objective analysis that, you know, are we doing very well? But my gut instinct is that if I ring the DCC, I'm going to be treated slightly differently than if I ring the ORC on a professional basis. In fact, the phone might even, it was interesting you said 10 seconds, you know, and so what we do is we task our staff, you know, what are you going to do? Oh, we're going to do a plan, we're going to do this, we thought about this, you said this. Whereas actually, you might find if you just got an independent, how do we objectively compare with the DCC? Let's up our game, you know, so you want to have somebody independent come in and actually assess us and give us some recommendations and to work with all the ideas here. And then once a year, they get an audit. This is how we're tracking. This is how we compare. Because at the moment, you know, like I just, my gut instinct is we're doing as well as we can. But convince me that it's actually excellent.
Thanks, Councillor Scott. Ben, any reaction to that?
Yeah. What we, as part of this as well, what we'd like to do is, you know, regularly conduct some surveys and some feedback. And get those benchmarked against other councils as well. It's sort of, at the moment, it's really key for us to get the tools in place first, see how we're going, and then go back to the community and get that feedback.
And just to finish my ranting, I actually think our council should be doing that on a more basis. So we should be getting, you know, like we're talking about, we have to connect with the community. Why don't we have how often do we do a survey with our community and ask them the hard questions about what they think about us and what we can do better? Yep. When was the last time we did that?
October the 12th is coming up.
Stick it in with the race.
October the 12th.
He's talking about an election. We've got our heads in the sand, guys.
I'm sick of talking about that. Something like three successive directors' communications.
Now, I wanted to see a move in that direction, but I won't do that rant again. Council of Laws is gone. Mrs. Gardner.
So I was just going to add to what Ben had said in response to you, Councillor Scott. So I think we've got a number of balls that we're trying to juggle. One is we wanted to understand our current state and what it was that we would need to do to work towards being excellent in terms of customer service. And we're talking customer service for the whole organisation. We're not just talking customer service as in the people that Ben looks after who are our very frontline people. As part of that, we have used some information to inform us. So we've done customer surveys of various kinds previously where we've got a level of information about how much people understand about who we are and what we do and those sorts of things. In addition to that, we targeted some specific stakeholders to do some in-depth interviews with them to talk about, you know, their experience of dealing with us. The other thing that's really interesting to me, and I know it's theoretical and I know I've said it before, but it is really important, is that we need to also be really clear about the what, the why, and the how. And at the moment, there's a limited level of understanding about some of that inside of the organisation. So we quite often know what we have to do. We sometimes know about how we're going to go about it, but sometimes we're just not very clear about the why. And so that's where we end up maybe focusing on the wrong things or getting bent out of shape. And that's why we're also rolling out training to all staff, talking about, and it's part of what we're proposing for your induction package also for the new triennium, about what is the concept of public value, because that's what we're about. That's what we have to deliver. And also, what is our social licence? Where is it at now, and where do we want to aim to be? And I know it sounds really theoretical, but unless you understand those concepts, we're never going to deliver what our community expects of us. And we are a public organisation. We are not selling widgets and, you know, TVs and whatever. So we have to deliver something that's over and above. The other issue we have is that a lot of our outcomes, you can't see them straight away. They take 10 years, 20 years, 30 years to bed in. So in the meantime, we've got to take the public with us and keep that social licence. So it's really important that we understand that and what it means. So the other things that are sort of dovetailing in. I understand the evaluation piece, absolutely. I think we do have some of that and we're getting better at it. But all of this comes together in a package to aim towards that excellent state that you're talking about.
Thank you. Councillor Robertson.
Thanks for that, and a lot of that's about sort of almost a cultural shift, but I think what Councillor Scott said is actually quite useful as well in getting someone in that's an expert on efficient customer service systems, because, we're a council, and we're quite good at being kind and nice if we work really hard at that. But actually, moving into a modern era of how we can do that, I think we probably would be better to get a bit of assistance if we can. Another thing that hasn't been mentioned is the use of apps, but I think that's something we should be looking at too. Even a pollution, like Care for My Environment, OSC app, and it's got pollution response, and you know that if you anonymously put in something and all the details are there, it's easy. It will instantly go to somebody who will respond to it, things like that. You'll get flood and flow info. You'll have a pest hub soon with information about pests, and that's the way people want info as well.
Very true.
So, yeah, apps is important, but I'm not an expert either. And, you know, we can all throw ideas in.
No, you're sounding pretty
good.
How
that all comes together does require one.
I'm very conscious we're robbing Councillor Noon of good technical committee time. So we better wind it up. Ben, I saw a whiff at least late in your presentation of an implementation plan.
Yeah.
You going to bring that back to us at some stage?
Yes.
Or is that just internal?
No, we can bring it back.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's important you understand what we're trying to do.
I think that'll be good. But thank you for that very thorough, detailed presentation. Councillor Hope.
Thank you. I just want to say, for once my husband didn't actually moan about this little brochure that came out with his rates, and he thought it actually was very good. And secondly, he also said it's great that you can ring up the RSC and in 10 minutes you get Shelby or whoever on the phone, and it's an actual real person, like the bank, which is just the PIDs. Having worked 12 and a half years at the DCC and helping them set up with what they do with their customer service, the other thing you must always remember is where this information that you get goes to, what property it sits on. I cannot stress that enough for you if you're coming to do something legally with buying a property. You know, that is a big thing as well. You must also think about where that number is, when it's signed off, when it's finished, where does it end up? I can't stress that enough. I've seen a lot of things go wrong. You know, there were some paper records we had at DCC and there was some filing and we had some on electronic, but they were never linked. So just be careful about that. But I do think you're on the right track and I do agree with what Councillor Scott says, but I think this here has been really good. Little things put out with our rates. We all hate getting our rates. The only thing I would say is perhaps your animation person, perhaps not around when it's rate times to say how your high country farmer is with 60,000 hectares with how he is today, how he's feeling when he's got to pay his rates if he's online. All I'm saying is there's some great information and great technology, but don't forget your phones. Yep. I think it's a really important old-fashioned way, and yes, I agree, there's lots of new apps and things coming out, but you'd be surprised. A number of people just pick up the phone still.
Thanks, Councillor Hope. Yep. Lisa, can we do your wee video now?
Yep.
Great.
Just to give it a very brief intro, this ties into a workshop that Bex Borland, the team leader for the Comms and Engagement Advisors, presented at earlier in the year regarding the annual plan approach. And this kind of culminates with all of that and ties into what Councillor Hope was mentioning as well with the flyer that went up with the rates brochure, and also what Ben conveniently said, that not all customers have a clear understanding of who ORC is and what it is that we're responsible for. So this video helps to show some of that as well in a video form. And we are hoping to launch this certainly in the next couple of days as well. It's a little bit later. We'd hoped it would go out just before rates hit the letterboxes, but I understand we're still getting some queries along those way as well, and we'll also use it for presentations that ORC will be at. Yes.
Isn't that the old logo?
That logo is not yet 100% landed. We're keen to discuss with EWE as well.
Just
yes.
Yes. I can recognise.
Yes.
Yeah. Zero, Scott one.
We don't like to preempt decision making. Okay, hope you enjoy it.
We're all proud to call Otago home, and we're working hard to care for our beautiful region. Water is our life source, feeding our land, our enjoyment, and our economy. Having good water in Otago is our priority, and we want to protect the quality of our waterways and make sure there's enough water to go round now and in the future. Climate change is already here. We're doing research to better understand the effects of climate change across Otago, so we can all plan and adapt to it. With increased urban development in Otago, we need to ensure our environment is protected. Our towns and cities are changing, and we need to change with them. We're looking at issues like responsible development and having well-connected public transport options. Biodiversity in Otago is important for all of us. We need to do our bit to protect Otago's native species and unique landscapes. Managing introduced plants and animals that threaten our natives will help our ecosystems thrive. We're also doing some other great work, like monitoring air quality. Remember, only burn dry wood and paper, because we all breathe what we burn. And did you know we have a 24/7 pollution response team? If you see any pollution, give us a call so we can investigate. A sustainable future is important to all of us. So we're taking action today to ensure we're all ready for tomorrow.
Our towns and cities are changing and we need to change with them. What the hell does that mean?
what it says.
Explain it.
Oh, you want me to explain that?
Well, somebody needs to. I don't get that at all.
Basically, I guess to summarise it, that we need to stay ahead of the game. So we need to make sure that we adapt within ORC with our work as our cities and towns are growing, in particular around urban development. So a lot of that stemmed from, I guess, sediment issues and things that we wanted to make sure we were.
So that wasn't the audience being spoken to, that was ORC being spoken to.
It's saying that, like, we, when we say we, as ORC, we need to adapt.
Okay, all right, that makes sense. Councillor.
It's poor. Not outstanding. Can't put that out. I'd love to see the script. You need some really good script writing on that. That script's poor, really bad. And I'll come to, I can give you all the detail of why it's poor very soon, if you want it. Your images are wrong.
Yeah.
For biodiversity, I didn't see an animal. I saw somebody chopping in wood and poisoning something, but there wasn't one animal in it that I could see. There was something about to be released from a cage. No, not good. You can't put that out. But the biggest problem is that we haven't got the right words to connect with our audience. So there's nothing emotional there. It needs to be a lot more concise. It needs to be a lot more inclusive of the audience that we're seeking to target. But I wouldn't put that out. No good.
Second picture was irrigation, just with all the central government stuff. I mean, it needs to be in there somewhere, but, you know, that was sort of one of the opening gambits. I thought that was a bit funny.
No, it tied up with the word economy. So,
I'm just saying that the mood of the reaction a little bit at the moment was.
I think you'd need to watch it a few times.
Yeah. No, you've only got one go, Michael. Stephen, you've got one go.
As the customer.
You've got one go as the customer.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why it's got to connect straight away. And that's why I'm really, I don't know who scripted it. But it's nobody who's a professional. You need the power of words and issues or images together. It's critical. And that doesn't make it happen for us. I'd love to see the script. Good that you've brought it here, though. At least we know what it looks like. We know how to improve it. But that's not going to make it. You've got one go. People, watch this once.
Okay. So if I can just make a couple of comments through the chair. So the first thing we tried to do was to talk about our four priorities, which I think you can at least see that they are coming through.
They're there.
And then also talk about, I guess, what we sort of refer to as business as usual. Those other things that we're doing that we're not holding up in lights as our four priorities, but we're also doing them and they're important. So that's the nature of what the video was trying to achieve. We're happy to have the feedback because that's really important and we can take that away and take that on board. If there's any other feedback, we're happy to have it.
Can we see the script? Because the script really needs some serious tweaking. Your images are wrong. Remember I talked to you about biodiversity? Why are there three images on biodiversity that don't have any animals in it? But by poisoning one of them. Those sorts of things. I mean, I think a little bit more thought needs to go into. And are we connecting? Always ask the question. You know, there's an 11-year-old child at the end of this. Are we connecting at that level?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Probably need some
penguins. It's very short. I actually, I thought it covered the bases in that short time.
Yep, Sam. When I first saw it, I thought that's good because it did cover those four priorities. And it looked good, and it generally sounded good. But the second time through, I thought, is this a string of visual and oral cliches all welded together? I think we need to look at that again and do a bit more work on it.
If I can just make one comment, I mean, the last thing I want to do is get involved in doing this work because you people know what you're doing. I thought that the messages were really important. Those pillars were there. I thought that was great. It hit me with a very light boxing glove rather than a big one. It just wasn't just edgy. It could, maybe for me, it might say the same things that it says now, but just have a little bit of edginess about it, something that made you open your eyes, and it might even be something to do with the background music or something. I've no idea. But I think that there's more good in that than there is detrimental, but I think that impact is important, and I felt it was just a bit soft, and that was all. But I'll leave it at that.
All right, we'd better move on anyway to the technical committee.